Embark on a journey with us where resilience meets opportunity. This is the Dirt Road to Success.
Hi, I'm Skip Colvin. Welcome back to Dirt Road to Success with Dr. William Chittenden with Swigsby's. He's president and CEO of Swigsby, which is Southwest Graduate School of Banking. We're going to be talking about artificial intelligence in the community banks today. We're also going to be talking about cryptocurrency and just different shifts in the digital currency world. What's going on? What do we need to be thinking about? And what do we need to be aware of? So welcome back, Dr. Chittenden. Glad to have you back.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, yeah. So let's, first question is, how can artificial intelligence help the community banks?
Well, let's take a step back real quick and just broadly define what's artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. And all it really is the ability to look at large amounts of data and synthesize it and pull out hidden threads or threads that might not be particularly obvious to us. Mm-hmm. So, and this is just a completely hypothetical example, but let's say that a bank runs an AI program on all of their deposit customers. And maybe it comes out that females that are 6 foot tall, that have red hair and blue eyes, are the ones that have the greatest amount of deposits. Now, could that be useful? Maybe, because at least you might know which customers to target a little bit more if you need mm-hmm. more deposits. Mm-hmm. And maybe you do the same type of thing over in terms of loans. Okay, what type of loans are our most profitable? What characteristics do our borrowers have that lead to the most profitable or least profitable loans?
So a lot of data analytics.
It really is, and again, I don't mean to oversimplify it too much, but that really is, it's glorified data analytics. And I don't mean glorified in a bad way. It means it's data analytics cubed.
Okay. Got it. You know, and I'm not a tech guy. So, you know, I'm learning about this. One of the classes I had at Swigsby, which I found to be extremely interesting, was John Walsh's, the guy that wrote Bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And he talked about some of the shifts and just the fintechs and all that. So I am a very, very high level, know nothing about AI, know nothing about fintech per se compared to a lot of people. But I do find it interesting, the data analytics piece, because I do like data. I like predictive data. I like to look at, you know, data and say, okay, if we do X, what happens? You know, and it's with running a bank, you know, there's all kinds of different decisions you can make that impact all these other things. But when you talk about artificial intelligence, can we see that artificial intelligence in the future could help us with obviously a type of customer to identify? What about underwriting? What about types of products and services? Tell me what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I'll answer the second part first, is if we're looking at types of products and services, mm-hmm. Again, yes, AI may be able to identify that, you know what, if you've got a customer that's between the ages of 25 and 35 that has a mortgage that's this balance, then they probably need this additional service. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're in the point of their life where they need to start planning for, in the very early ages, very early stages, I should say, of saving for retirement.
Okay.
And so if they meet those characteristics, then by golly, this is probably a product they need, or at least that we find on average, that's what those folks need. So we know to target that product towards those customers.
And that would, I mean, for a lender, it takes a lot of the guesswork out. It allows us to kind of be more rifle approach versus shotgun approach.
Oh, very much so. Yes.
I mean, I do like the theory behind that, but let's dig a little bit more on it.
If we look at it in terms of underwriting and trying to make credit decisions, mm-hmm. let's just assume for a moment that our AI model is perfect. It can perfectly discriminate. And when I say discriminate, I mean, tell who's going to pay us back and who's not going to pay us back. With perfect accuracy mm-hmm. based on all the historical data of all the customers we've ever had. And let's say that if we start going through those characteristics, we find that one of the distinguishing characteristics of those that pay us versus doesn't pay us is somebody's gender. Hmm. Then all of a sudden, are we going to say that, and we'll pick on the men, we'll say that men are worse at paying their loans back than women. We'll just, again, hypothetical, make that assumption for our illustrative purposes here only. Do we only make loans to women? What if it comes down to that it predicts that a particular race is much more likely to pay us back than other races, or one race is less likely to pay us back. That is discrimination in right. the most typical use of that word. And we don't want to be doing that.
No.
Similar type thing in terms of other types of distinguishing factors that we normally might not think of. So maybe it's occupation. Are we going to allow those types of things to justify discriminating against certain groups of people because our model says that this perfectly predicts who pays us back and who doesn't pay us back?
Yeah, that definitely gets into a discrimination piece with AI, and you can't generalize through that AI. So you're saying that could be the downfall of one side of AI. The upside is, oh, we can identify what products and services certain people generally use, and then there we can rifle approach that.
Exactly.
Hmm. How do you see this change in the big banks even? I know the big banks are probably the ones that are going to start using AI to target certain customers.
Well, my guess is they're already on the bleeding edge of this, that they've mm-hmm. got folks on staff that are working on this, trying to figure out mm-hmm. How can we best apply this. And you got to have a lot of data, and you've got to have a lot of testing to make sure that what the AI model says is going to work actually works in the future, mm-hmm. right? Because if you've got past data, you can come up with a model that perfectly explains the past data. But what you want is, can it predict the future data.
Future data, yeah.
So it's going to be a while, and I think there's going to have to be some testing on that. My guess is that for the community banks, you're going to see third parties develop products that community banks can plug into their systems to start doing that AI analysis for them.
Okay.
I don't think the local community bank's going to have to hire one or more AI experts to do this. I think you're going to see third parties that are going to see an opportunity here, can create a product that's catered to community banks, and then deploy it that way. And so community banks will be able to tap into it.
You mean like a Fiserv or FIS Global
or
Jack Henry or something.
Some brand new firm that we haven't even heard of that has started from scratch with the idea of implementing AI at the community bank level.
Well, we talked about earlier between shows, the chips about, you know, NVIDIA or however mm-hmm. you say that company that's just really blowing up right now. And obviously AI is the future. It's the newest thing. And I go back to, you know, old dogs can learn new tricks. However, I'm not sure that I'm ready for AI to be telling me what I need to be doing, what I don't need to be doing. But I think that's the wave of the future. I think there's a generation behind us, Dr. Chittenden, that's going to be using AI for a lot of stuff in the banking world, whether it be products, services, whether it be underwriting, whether it be targeting certain communities to go in. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some kind of artificial intelligence to tell banks, hey, you need to put a branch here because this is what the data says about demographics.
Oh, exactly.
Know? Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's going to make forecasts exactly on that. What mm-hmm. what does the growth in that particular area look like?
Yeah.
What does the potential income of that area look like? Does it make mm-hmm. sense to put in new brick and mortar? Mm-hmm. And it may even tell you, you know what, it makes a lot more sense just to buy that building over there yeah. rather than build a new building over here.
Or close the branch altogether.
Yeah, exactly.
My concern, too, with artificial intelligence, and it may be a false concern. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. But, you know, we've talked on these last couple of shows about the importance and significance of us bankers going through a banking school like Swigsby or Swigsby and learning all aspects of the bank, you know, the back office, how to manage the portfolio, how to look at loan loss provision, all these different components that people on the front line might not think about. But could AI come in and replace all of that thinking?
I think AI really needs to be looked at as a tool, just like your GPS in your vehicle is a mm-hmm, tool. Mm-hmm. Now, you've probably heard the stories of somebody followed their GPS and drove right into the lake.
Yes.
You need to use a little bit of common sense, right? Yes, the GPS told me to go down this, but I see that big body of water in front of me. I'm going to stop. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, again, it's a tool, and you still have to have, I believe, real people making real decisions. Mm-hmm. Just because AI says this is the answer doesn't necessarily mean it's the best answer for your particular situation. And again, it's just like any other piece of information. This is it's not a a sentient being, so it doesn't have its own thought. So you can't say you're right. Terminator type.
I was just about to say Terminator. Yeah.
But it really is an opinion. It's an informed opinion. They've compiled their rationale for that opinion or their position, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the one right singular thing to do. So it's a tool. Is it something that should be unbiased? Yes. Should it be a pretty good tool? Yes. But just like my GPS does a pretty good job of getting me from point A to point B, every once in a while, it'll say, exit here. And I go, no, that's stupid. No. I know to go down to the next exit and turn around. It makes it a lot faster.
Right, right.
So again, it's a tool.
And but that goes back to experience.
Yeah, ultimately, we're the ones that need to make the decisions and understand that we're driving the decisions. It's not driving the decisions.
And we don't need to depend on AI to make those decisions for us.
Correct.
Again, and that's the scary part, is that sometimes you may have someone saying, well, you know, the software says this is what we need to do. Let's do it. Let's use some common sense. Let's use some analysis. I call it back of the napkin sometimes is, you know, better than anything. Just sit down and figure out what's real, what's not, what's the best decision for the bank.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And don't depend upon AI. Use it as a tool, like you said, as just information.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the next subject, this central bank digital currency. You know, you got AI, then you got the feds talking about this central bank digital currency and wanting to push it. We won't even get into the bird walk of the conspiracy theory behind that, but tell me your thoughts on the central bank digital currency.
Well, a lot of folks, we got to have this. We want to have a digital currency, and I think it's a lot of folks don't understand one what digital currency really means and what central bank digital currency means. I would argue that the vast majority of our current liquid wealth is digital.
Right. I agree.
So, you know, looking at how much is in my bank account versus how much is in my wallet right now, I can tell you there's a lot more in the bank account. And all of that is digital. Yeah. If I go down to the bank, it's not like for all of us, they've got all that sitting there in the vault. No,
it didn't happen that way.
It's just an electronic form. That's all it is.
Let me say this while you've mentioned vault. We don't print our money in the vault. People think, oh, I go to the bank and get it all. You know, I get all my cash out. No, it doesn't happen that way.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
We have to order that. If you want to get a big, large amount, we have to order that, you know.
And then the Fed actually has to come over and ship it over to you.
That's right. That's right.
So the vast majority of our wealth is already in a digital form. Now, some think of, well, I want it to be like Bitcoin, a cryptocurrency. Now, that's a little bit different, because with a cryptocurrency, the idea is that any transactions that I make aren't going through a third party. So if I owe you $20, I can send it to you a variety of ways, right? I can go onto my bank's app, and if I've got your banking information, then I can send it directly to your account. And it'll go through the ACH system, right? Automated clearinghouse system. Yep. If we use something like PayPal, it's going to go through their system. If you go through a cryptocurrency, it's not going through anyone's quote unquote system. There's no centralized system. The idea is that you have this blockchain, this open notebook that keeps track of all of these transactions. And as long as everybody is matching up all the transactions, the $20 is going to go straight through to you. One of the things that some folks find appealing about it is it's anonymous. And again, I'm not a paranoid type person, I think, for most things. And I don't need my transactions to be anonymous. If I'm sending you $20 and it's anonymous, or the government knows that I sent you $20, I personally don't care. Who does care? Well, drug dealers, money launderers, folks generally dealing in illegal activities were the first to truly embrace these cryptocurrencies, because the transactions couldn't be traced to a particular user, because you've got anonymity on both ends.
You know, I didn't realize that till you just said it. I didn't know that it was anonymous. I thought if I have an account,
it knows the account number that it belongs to, and folks can see that, but they don't know who that account number belongs to.
Really?
That's you, and that's why, a slight aside, some early buyers of Bitcoin have lost upwards of millions of dollars because that digital wallet that they had mm-hmm. was on an old hard drive from that computer from 10 years ago that they threw out. And so without that long string of digits, I believe it's 25 digits, that's your basically your account number, your digital wallet. Without that, you have no access to your account because it is anonymous.
Wow. That's scary.
Now today,
but they've lost all that money.
They've lost it. It's gone. Now today they've made it a little bit easier because you don't have to keep your wallet on your hard drive. You've got apps and there's exchanges and those kind of things that you can log into. Mm-hmm. But there you start to lose some of that anonymity because...
And what is the crypto piece? And we were talking central bank digital currency earlier. How do those connect?
They really don't.
Okay.
In that... I think some people think they're the same because, well, I'm sending it to you and you're going to get it electronically.
Yeah.
Well, again, most of the payments that we send are electronic anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you got ACH, you got debit card, credit card transaction, you got wires, all right. That's digital.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If we look first, let's look at central bank digital currency. All it's saying is that instead of having a debit card, for example, against your bank account, you will now have a debit card against the Federal Reserve. You'll have an account with the central bank. And so that's the central bank digital currency.
Hmm.
Currently,
which I don't like.
All of your deposits are liabilities of the bank that they're at.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So the bank is that financial intermediary.
And that's the one I choose.
Right, exactly. Yeah. With central bank digital currency, the Federal Reserve is the one that holds your deposits. And so it would be a liability of the Federal Reserve. Hmm. I think a potential negative implication, particularly for community banks, is if the Federal Reserve is going to start taking deposits directly from the public, does that mean they're going to bypass deposits at their local community bank? Well, they might if the Federal Reserve pays a higher interest rate than your bank does. Mm-hmm.
Which puts them in competition with the community bank.
Exactly. And so that, I think, is a potential problem if this is something that comes to fruition.
I also think, too, you know, a community bank, you having that one-on-one relationship with your banker and your bank manager and your maybe even the owner of the bank, right? That one-on-one relationship is totally lost if you go to the Fed. Totally lost.
Oh, yeah.
Which means if you make a transaction that they think is fraudulent or something else, they can shut down your account in a moment's notice without picking up the cell phone and calling you and say, Hey Joe, did you make this transaction at whatever? And I said, yeah, I made that. Okay. We're good. You don't have the relationship at the Fed level where they could shut you down at any moment. Or, and I've heard horror stories, you go buy a bunch of ammo and they shut you down because you bought something they weren't approving of.
Now, from the government's perspective, the central government, and again, one thing to just keep in mind and be aware of in the U.S. is that our central bank is separate from our central government,
mm-hmm.
right? So the Federal Reserve,
they say. Yeah,
I'm a strong believer. I believe that they are pretty much independent. It's not as if they just, quote unquote, print money to satisfy the spending needs of the central government. Now we can get into the nuances of them financing it, et cetera. But that's a whole other hour show,
that's
at least.
Another show. We might need whiskey on that one.
So, but for the payment of Social Security payments, mm-hmm. the payment of other types of government benefits, it's more efficient, or it would be more efficient, just to be able to electronically put it into an account that the Federal Reserve controls. And so from that perspective, it could make sure that the funds are there. You wouldn't have to worry about, gee, if the bank fails and that's the day my Social Security check gets there, I'm not going to have access to it potentially that day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a big enough reason for us to really go running down the road of a central bank digital currency, mm-hmm. but it is a potential argument on where it could be beneficial, or where, at least where some folks might be helped.
I do see the negative impact of community banks, though, if the deposits are held somewhere else.
I think to me, that's the biggest disadvantage in terms of individuals holding accounts directly with the Fed, that that's going to serve as a substitute for deposits at their community bank, mm-hmm. and that they're not going to want to do that. Now, from the, I would say from the Fed's perspective, if, and talk, going back to AI, if they're monitoring all of these central bank digital currency transactions, AI is likely going to be able to pick up illegal type activity, fraudulent activity, those types of things. And so it might be able to identify some of that.
So it might be the government is trying to do the digital currency in conjunction with AI to be able to track and monitor and determine if there's any fraudulent activity.
Right. So if there's money laundering, those types of mm-hmm. things, they AI, at least in the ideas, it would be able to pick that up.
And the conspiracy theory hat would be, well, that's just more overreach from the government.
Right. But they control literally everything
right
now.
Right. That's right. And then we talked a little bit just briefly earlier about crypto. Let's just dive into crypto. Okay. Now, I'm not a fan of crypto. I mean, I know our dollar is pretty much a fiat dollar anyway, because we're not backing it by gold or anything like that. It's just good faith of the government. But crypto's even out there farther than that.
Well, to your point, you know, our currency in the U.S. is a fiat currency, which means that, it's a fiat currency, which means that it has value because the government says it has value.
Yes.
Right. So we read on there, you know, it's good for all debts, private and public. Right.
Right. Right.
If something were to happen to the central government, then those dollars would be worth nothing. So you can go back to after the Civil War, of course, all those Confederate dollars were worth nothing because that government was gone. So part of it's going to depend on what is your outlook for the strength of the U.S. government going forward. Again, I'm an optimist when it comes to that. Yeah, there's disagreements at the political levels, but from a practical perspective, by golly, America's still the best place on earth to live.
Okay.
And so I think there's enough of us that believe that we're going to do what it takes to keep America the best place to be, that it's not going to just, the government is not going to implode on itself.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. What other country can you go to? Now, look, we have our own problems. We do. But what other country can you go to in the world that is better than this one?
Well, and I've been asked that. So what currency could take over for the dollar? And I don't believe there's an other world currency. The euro is not going to do it.
No.
The yuan is not going to be it out of China. It's obviously not going to be the Russian ruble.
Right.
So what else could it be? I mean, there is nothing. It's not going to be the British pound.
It's not going to be the peso.
Right. And so the dollar, at least for the foreseeable future, is going to still be the world currency. In addition to being our fiat currency in the U.S., it's mm-hmm. going to be the defaulto currency across the world.
Do you see the BRICS being a major impact on the... Because, you know, dollar's strong right now, which is, you know, the gold strong, dollar strong, market strong. Do you think the BRICS is going to have a negative impact on the dollar?
I don't think so overall. I mean, if we're looking at... you know, why is the dollar strong? Part of it's because relative to other countries, we're doing much better mm-hmm. financially and economically. Mm-hmm. And so folks are willing to put those dollars or their funds in the U.S. rather than keeping them in their home countries.
It's still safe and stable.
Yeah.
You know.
Is it perfect? No. But is it better than everything else out there? Absolutely.
That's right. That's right.
So now let's get to crypto. With cryptocurrency, it's a digital currency that literally is created out of thin air that somebody made up. Mm-hmm. And so if we're talking Bitcoin in particular, of course, part of it's the big mystery on who was the original programmer that came up with this, that created it. To me, that's not the point. How do you get cryptocurrency? How do you get Bitcoin? Well, particularly in the early days, the idea, and you can still do it today to a certain extent, is you're going to mine it, right? And so you've got a computer program that's basically solving all these mathematical algorithms in which it comes to, if you happen to be the one that gets the solution, you are awarded a Bitcoin. And that's still how it works today. That's how the number of Bitcoins grows. Now, why is there any value associated with that?
I have no idea.
Well, in my mind, there shouldn't be. So very fundamental. I'm going to give you the 30-second MBA course right now.
Okay.
Most valuable thing that I teach my students, I believe, is if they have this concept down, so much other stuff either makes sense or doesn't make sense. The value of any asset is the present value of all future cash flows. So if we're looking at bonds, what are our cash flows? Well, we're going to have coupon payments. We're going to have that face value or par value when it matures. If we're investing in stocks, we may have a stream of dividends and then hopefully some price that we're going to get in the future. If it's that apartment complex, then it's going to be the value of all of those, the present value of all of those rents we're going to be receiving. There are no cash flows associated with cryptocurrencies.
No.
And it's the digital equivalent of Beanie Babies. So you're of an age, at least, that would have remembered.
I had a Beanie Baby. Yeah, I bought that, crap back
so
in the day.
So why did Beanie Babies have such crazy values?
Hype.
Everybody wanted it for whatever reason, hype being it. So we can go back to, you know, talk about the Dutch tulip bulb bubble.
Yes.
It's the same type of thing. Folks same went thing. Nuts for these tulip bulbs. Tulip bulbs worth as much as a house, and it was worth as much of a house until all of a sudden it wasn't.
So how did it get approved, Bitcoin get approved for an ETF?
I don't know. I think it's strange. Now, you have Bitcoin itself, and then, of course, there's a variety of other cryptocurrencies that are out there. To me, that's part of why it could never take over as a worldwide currency. And there's actually several reasons, but that's one reason, is how many of these cryptocurrencies are we going to have? So if
XRP is another one. And I mean, I keep hearing that some of the central banks around the world are wanting to integrate XRP. Do you think XRP is going to have a ETF next?
Who knows? Again, I'm surprised that they approved it for Bitcoin, but why won't Bitcoin take over? At least replace the dollar, let me put it that way, as our regular currency. One reason is because there will be no more than a fixed amount of Bitcoin. Currently, it grows a little bit, and I forget how many years we still have to go before it's maxed out. To have a growing economy, you have to have a growing money supply.
Right.
So earlier we were talking about inflation, and the idea is if you want that perfect world of no inflation, then the money supply needs to grow at the same rate as the economy. If the economy is growing at 3%, then the money supply needs to grow at 3%. The value of our dollar, the currency, will stay the same.
Okay.
If Bitcoin has a maximum amount of Bitcoins that'll ever be issued, does that mean our economy just stops growing? Do we not want to have any growth beyond that?
And how does it go from 20,000 to 75,000 in a year, or however long it took to get there? That swing to me is such volatility, scares me to death.
Well, that's one of the other problems with it replacing our currency. To serve as money, something has to have a store of value. And that's one thing that the cryptocurrencies do not have, because they are so volatile. They can't serve as a currency. It's really a speculative investment. And I use the term investment very loosely here.
Okay.
Because if I'm buying a Bitcoin, again, I'm not buying a promise of a series of future cash flows, other than the bigger sucker theory is that I hope I can find somebody that's a bigger sucker than me to buy these Bitcoins from me.
Yeah.
So maybe I paid $30,000. I can find somebody that'll buy it from $40,000. So it has to have a store of value, which it does not. Along with that, it has to be a unit of account. Things that we buy are priced in dollars. Things that are priced in Bitcoin are not priced in Bitcoin. They're priced in how many Bitcoin will it take for that dollar amount. So just as an example, if a car cost, and let's just say Bitcoin today is at 60 grand. If a car is at 60 grand, they don't price it at 60,000 or one Bitcoin.
Yeah.
They price it at $60,000, and then they'll see, okay, what's Bitcoin trading at today? Assuming they'll even accept a Bitcoin.
Right.
And they'll go, okay, today that would be 1.01 Bitcoins. Tomorrow it might be 0.99 Bitcoins. So it doesn't serve as a unit of account.
You know, I'm listening to this, and it really brings up the central bank digital currency and the Bitcoin are in essence very similar. And what I mean by that is the Fed, you may deposit cash with the Fed, but the Fed could shut you down like that.
Yes.
Bitcoin, same thing. that whole system could collapse tomorrow and be gone.
Well, the idea, though, behind the openness of the books for cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. right? That whole blockchain,
yep.
is that it can't fail. Because okay. everybody that's in the system is part of those nodes, and collectively okay. they all have the system backed up. So I think blockchain is a fantastic concept and technology for public record keeping. You could do it for all kinds of audit. I mean, there's all kinds of practical mm-hmm. applications for the blockchain. I think the application of using it for money, and particularly if you think it's going to replace the dollar, is silly. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. And the third thing that something's got to have to be money is it's got to serve as a medium of exchange. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of transactions won't take place using Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know, most stores aren't going to accept it.
Right. People aren't. I don't have it.
Your
don't
bank's
want
not going to accept it.
No.
So again, to me, it goes back to those digital Beanie Babies. Why were Beanie Babies so valuable? Well, because for whatever reason, the one that you bought was hyped. Maybe they didn't make as many. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of folks got excited about it and went up to $100. And so Skip bought it at $50, tried to sell it at $100, but you caught it just as prices were coming back down.
Sold it for $2.
And you got to sell it for $2.
It's kind of like me in stock, right?
That's right.
I mean, I'm always on the backside of it, you know.
Well, and that's an opportunity for you. You need to start mm-hmm. selling your picks as just mm-hmm. the opposite of Skip picks.
Yeah. If you want to make money, just buy some options that the stock's going to fall. You know, that's because if I'm going to buy it, the stock is going to fall.
But for me, the proof of it is Dogecoin. Mm. So Dogecoin came out a few years ago, and it's, if you're not familiar with it, the creator of Dogecoin said, "This is a joke. It is an homage to my dog." And although it's funny, if you see Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, they always have a picture of a coin. Mm-hmm. It's funny that they show a picture of a physical coin, even though there's no physical currency that right. exists, right? It's all supposed to be right. digital. Well, the Dogecoin had a picture of his dog on the Dogecoin. Mm-hmm. He said this is a joke, and people valued it. Now, since then, the price has come down.
Yeah.
But it was worth a significant amount of money, and it was just a joke.
Wow.
So I don't see crypto, taking over the world. Mm-hmm. Why it's at $60,000, $70,000, I'll admit, I have no idea. Now, having said that, do I wish I'd had the foresight 10 years ago to have bought it when it was super cheap? Absolutely, because then... I'd be super rich. And although I love talking to you, Skip, I'd probably be on my island that I bought sipping an adult beverage right about now.
Right. And I'm so glad. Here's the thing, though. I don't know how, I mean, because I'm going back to me not knowing much about crypto. I wouldn't know how to buy it and I wouldn't know how to sell it. I mean, and then if you do sell it, where is the money? Where does the money come from? I mean, you know, there's so many different variables. You know, that's why I'm saying I don't understand it.
Well, that part of it is it's like any other market now. Okay. The money's going to come from whoever's buying it from you. Mm-hmm. And so
it go into your bank account?
Well, it would go into your crypto account, and then you'd be able to, to move that.
So there's another little component that you create a crypto account, like a crypto bank account. You make the purchase in there and you make the sell in there?
And so, yes. So basically what's happened now is, you know, since this came out, the technology has advanced so that there's an app for that.
Okay.
And so you have these exchanges, they call them crypto exchanges, mm-hmm. that allow, and so they'll hold all of that wallet information that we talked about earlier. Okay. So you don't have to remember that super long digit. All you've got to have is your username and password to get in there, right?
Okay.
And you can have dollars in your account, and then you can have various cryptocurrencies in your account. And so you can just move across those different ones. Of course, there's been problems with those exchanges. So was it Sam Bankman-Fried?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, big hair.
Yes.
Big hair.
Yeah. And so his exchange imploded. And
mm-hmm. I remember that, yeah. So How many billions was that?
It was a lot, more than I have.
Yeah, yeah. Or you'd be on the yacht whatever. Yeah.
And so we've seen collapses in exchanges. We've mm-hmm. seen actually some theft in these exchanges where all of a sudden there's millions of dollars worth of these cryptocurrencies that are gone out of people's accounts. So by no means is it something that's super safe. I think it's extremely speculative. And folks that have made a lot of money with cryptos, I believe, are confusing luck with skill.
Gotcha.
And being very lucky doesn't make you skillful at picking securities.
Yeah.
And again, I'll admit I have a level of investing jealousy that I didn't have the foresight, even though if it's a bigger sucker game, it sure is lasting an awful long time.
It sure is, yeah.
But I won't be surprised when the bubble bursts. And it really is. It's just a bubble.
Yeah, and I think we talked about artificial intelligence impacting community banks. I think artificial intelligence is going to be playing a role in cryptocurrency and how to do all the mining. And you talked about mining and stuff. You know, we talked about the central bank digital currency. I mean, all of these are things that maybe your old traditional banker, you know, doesn't dabble in. Okay. Because, you know, it's a little different. It's a different kind of look at things, but this younger generation, they're all in, you know, I mean, I know some of these young, my son, for example, he's all into this crypto and understanding all this stuff. I think for where we're headed, okay, either the old dogs need to learn some new tricks, or we need to have this younger generation really work on being very risk averse with the banks, because if you're using AI, or you're using some type of central bank digital currency, or you're as a bank dabbling in cryptocurrency, there is risk.
Oh, absolutely.
And going back to Swigsby, you know, running through this education where you get an advanced education in how to run the banks and how to manage risk. Like, for example, the Risk Management Association had the certified risk management certification.
Yeah.
You know, we went through that, did all that training and stuff. You know, I think about all that stuff, and I not that I'm major risk averse, but I'm definitely, because obviously I wouldn't be doing a podcast if I was risk averse. You know, this comes out of my pocket, not somebody else's, right? But the reality is that, you know, you do need to understand the risk and outweigh that, you know, of what it looks like. Me, I'm not a crypto guy. I'm not going to be a crypto guy. It's not something I'm going to dabble in. I do want to look at AI. I want to look at AI as a tool. And I hope that the feds never go to a central bank digital currency. So that's my position on it. I'll let you finish up with your position on those three topics.
Well, I don't think we're very far apart on those. Again, I don't think crypto is the future. Mm-hmm. And who knows, maybe, you know, 10 years from now, folks will come back and go, look, it took over. And I was wrong.
Yeah.
But I'd be happy to come back in 10 years and look at it one way or the other to see how that ended up. At least the way that it's proposed to go, I'm not a huge fan of a central bank digital currency. I'm not sure that there's a need, other than I think there's maybe the pressure to have something that can compete with a cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see why we would need to have that. And to your point, yeah, I think AI's, it's like any tool. A tool can be used for good, or it can be used, you know, sledgehammer works great for breaking concrete and driving stakes, but, you know, you can break somebody's windshield with it too. So like any tool, you can use it right, or you can use it to do damage. And I think it's the same thing with AI.
I agree. Well, just to recap, obviously, Southwest Graduate School of Banking is very important to me. So if you're a banker, or you're, you know, in the financial services market, not just banking, but other areas too of the bank, but, you know, definitely look into going to school, continuing your education, becoming a leader at the next level in the banking is going to be very important, because we have a huge transition of people retiring pretty soon. So we're going to need those young bankers coming in and really learning about the bank. Number two, community banks are the way to go. That's my personal opinion, but community banks are the way to go. We really do grassroots, Main Street, really work with these small business owners to impact the communities in which we serve. Yep. It's very, very important that we do that. Obviously, AI is coming. We can't stop it. There's not anything we can do. So we need to make sure that we're on the tool side of this and using it for the right methods. And I think we need to embrace it in some capacity and really use it as an opportunity to learn what our customers are looking. The data is very important. And using AI for the right approach, we can learn what our customers are looking for.
Right.
What like customers are using that we could be using for other customers too. So I say use it for the benefit. Central bank digital currency. Let's just not even go down the path. Why we're doing ETFs for Bitcoin, I have no idea. So I'm with you on that. Crypto, I'm staying away from it. You know, I've got enough risk in my life right now. So that's definitely not one that we want to be going down. But anything, any closing words of wisdom from a great mentor and a great professor of mine? Anything we need to know about?
All I would say is, you know, continue as you are as a lifelong learner. I'm obviously a bit biased in that I've been in professional education for, you know, the vast majority of my career. Mm-hmm. And I strongly believe in always learning, not just for the students that I'm teaching, but the stuff that I can learn too. So, continue to do that. Yeah. If you want to, go to swigsby.org, to register for our sessions this summer, or if you're on the bank officer, bank director side, reach out and we'd be happy to get you set up for, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho in August.
Yes. And it's a great honor of mine. Obviously, you know, we've been friends since I was in school at Swigsby, but it's a great honor of mine that you came and participated in my shows. And really, I get to learn a little bit more about you. Obviously didn't know you're from El Paso, but get to know a little bit more about you. And then we get to actually instill some knowledge, hopefully, in some folks that are watching. So we appreciate you being on the show. Please take a look at Dirt Road to Success. We're on all the mediums, all the podcasts, YouTube, Facebook, all those things. DirtRoadToSuccess.com if you want to check out our website. And obviously Americana TV, or it's actually Americonic.com. We call it Americonic TV. It's a great platform, great movies, great shows. You know, they're bringing all kinds of new stuff on, stuff our generation loves, Bonanza, you know, all those good Rifleman, all these shows, old shows that we can watch. So thank you guys for watching, tuning in. Look forward to some new stuff coming up. Thank you again for watching. Bye-bye.